This episode is brought to you by Amazon Logistics, a new program for business leaders who want to own and operate their own package delivery business. Get access to Amazon's logistics training and technology and start building a team of motivated drivers in your community. To learn more about becoming an Amazon Delivery Service Partner, go to logistics.amazon.com.
Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Rado Palomario, Managing Director of Elcott Global. Our mission is to connect the supply chain ecosystem by bringing forward the most interesting leaders in the industry. And today I'm delighted to have with us Professor Richard Balding, who is the Chair of Supply Chain Strategy at the Center for Logistics and Supply Chain Management of Penfield School of Management in the UK, as well as past chairman of the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport for the United Kingdom. Richard works with European and international companies on logistics and supply chain projects in all sectors, including pharmaceutical, retail, automotive, high-tech, food and drinks, and professional services. His significant contribution to logistics and supply chain management has been recognized by his being appointed as Officer of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire by Queen Elizabeth II in the year 2013, and he also won in 2019 the National Teaching Fellowship, which is the most prestigious individual award in higher education. I'm very happy and thrilled that Professor Richard took the time, and let's welcome him and thank you for joining us, Richard.
Yeah, no problem. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you all today.
Super. So I wanted to firstly maybe give our audience a brief storyline in terms of how you started in supply chain. I know that that at the very beginning you were in raw materials at the very early stage of your career. You were a materials engineer, and then for many, many years you transitioned into a very, let's say, practical academia. So maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I started off my first degree was in materials engineering, materials science and technology, and I started off my career actually working in manufacturing engineering and production management, and I used to make bricks, building bricks. So I ended up managing a facility which produced about 1.2 million building bricks a week. And these were, you know, the red bricks that you see buildings made out of in England as you're moving forward. But believe it or not, we made 144 different types of standard square bricks, but then you could do all sorts of special things with them. And so I worked there for a period of time. I then moved into the metals industry, which was actually the copper industry, where I was working in that particular area for a while. And it was while I was on that journey and I was putting technology into copper smelters and copper smelting facilities, doing manufacturing systems engineering, that I accidentally fell into academia. I think that's the best way to describe it, because during those previous roles, particularly in the brick industry, you're managing a whole supply chain, but to be quite frank, I didn't really realize it at the time. And I accidentally fell into academia and I joined the Warwick Manufacturing Group, which is based at the University of Warwick. And I was there for a number of years. Had great fun there. I joined when there were 70 staff. I left when there was 500 staff within that particular group under the late Professor Kumar Bhattacharya, who is a very famous figure in the United Kingdom. I then decided, after doing my PhD in my spare time while working there, and the big thing about Warwick was that we were very much engaged with engineering companies. So a lot of my time was actually spent really in a way working with companies, working with managers in manufacturing environments. And supply chain, as we know it today, was really just in its infancy. So I was sort of working with those organizations, many of, you know, automotive companies, aerospace companies, and so on and so forth within that area. I then decided it was time to escape academia, and I failed dismally and ended up at Cranfield University. I sort of worked with a number of consultancies and various people, and I was going to go and work with them. And the story goes that one of the professors here was a non-exec director for one of those companies, and he says, no, you're not having him. He can come to Cranfield, but he can work with you for a few days. So I've been at Cranfield now for 21 years, believe it or not. What's great about Cranfield is everything we do, it's all about knowledge into action. So all our students are postgraduate students. They're people like yourself working in industry. And we do a lot of work with organizations around the world. So since then, we're doing research, but also what we're very much doing is trying to embed good supply chain practice within those organizations. And Cranfield's kind enough to let me do sort of private work. So I'm a non-exec director with a number of large organizations. And as your introduction said, I was chairman of the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport for a number of years. For 4 years, and I've just had to step down. I've done the maximum number of terms you can do, and the governance that we put in said that you couldn't have people on the board and as chairman for too long, because that's bad for a company of that type. So for professional institutions, you need a little bit of a change. So I'm now immediate past chairman. I still have some connections, but I'm letting the current team get on with things and keeping a low profile for a few months before I just sort of go back and perhaps do something else, who knows.
You seem to have a pattern of doing that, and it's not necessarily uncommon, because if you're very passionate about something, it tends to happen. I'd love to ask you a little bit in terms of the work that you do for multinationals, for corporates, and you are purview to, and you said that you sit on a few boards and you see a lot of these discussions around corporate supply chains in action. I wanted to ask you maybe and start here with the question, what do you see as the main challenges that they are being faced with in this world of, I don't want to give you a menu list actually. Let me ask you, what do you see as the main challenges that companies are faced with when it comes to supply chain in today's world?
Well, I think if we're sitting in the boardroom, some of the things that we have to comply with are actually quite challenging. So it depends on the companies that you're with. So, for example, modern day slavery is a particularly important area that is, can be severely disruptive to an organization if you find out that that's going on in your supply chain. Of course, things like conflict minerals, cybersecurity increasingly is something which is very much, on the agenda within the board. And I think what's actually really important about this is that from a supply chain perspective, if you think that competition is not between individual companies, but it's between the supply chains that they're part of, we are all very much connected. And if we're looking at some of the foundational elements of supply chain 4.0, which we're starting to see, taking place within the environment, that starts to create all sorts of challenges, because this increasing connectivity is also presenting us with, actually greater vulnerability and greater risk within the supply chain environment. So if you think about, the foundations of supply chain 4.0 and industry 4.0, things like systems integration, big data analytics, simulation, virtualization, Internet of Things, the cloud, cybersecurity, which I've already mentioned, autonomous systems, augmented reality and additive manufacturing. All these things are sort of joining together. In the past, you will talk to supply chain professionals and you say, hey, you need to think about cybersecurity. And they'll say, it's not my job, it's the IT department's job, right? It's not. It is everybody's job. And I'll be quite honest, it's very much the responsibility of a supply chain professional, a supply chain director, to think and consider the whole cybersecurity issue. Why is that? Because if we're looking at some of the more recent attacks on corporates, it's occurring through their supply chain partners. So in other words, you have a supply chain partner that is compromised. And because we're all connected, then they're able to get into your systems and compromise what you're doing as well. So, you know, I look at the supply chain and I think, you know, okay, what you need to think about is, you know, we all need to be thinking around those particular things. I mean, that's just one example. We also have, if you're looking at cyber terrorism, I mean, that's another area, just supply chain terrorism. That's another area which is increasing. So, you know, if you're looking at some of the latest stats on that, we're getting 3.7 instances a week now occurring where terrorist activity is happening, which is actually generating serious issues for supply chains. So we've got a whole raft of different things that we're having to deal with. Consumers demanding greater traceability, but of course, you know, then we've got the whole cost issue as well, which underlies everything. At the end of the day, we've got to make sure we can make some money and do that cost effectively. And I think in a way that's also been a big challenge, because, you know, if you think about, for example, in retail, the world of omni-channel, where, you know, consumers are wanting to buy things, have it delivered online and everything else, if you don't understand the cost to serve in that particular area, you lose money very, very quickly. And we're finding many organizations, many traditional retailers who really are just, just losing everything because they're trying to play that game and they're not playing it properly. So it depends on the sector you're in, but there's a heck of a lot of stuff which are on the boardroom agenda at the moment, which is part of the challenge of the complexity of what we're having to deal with.
Mm. I could not agree more. And also the fact that you are purview to so many industries, that also paints a very complex and diverse picture, because, you know, obviously there's differences between each of them. I was reading recently the World Economic Forum presented some facts, and also they had, I think, 44 factories of the future. There's a list, I don't know if you saw that one, where they basically highlighted the best manufacturing facilities in the world that are using the different elements of Industry 4.0 to be, a suite of between artificial intelligence and machine learning and, you know, digital twins and big data and everything that you want to connect to that. But I'd love to go a little bit deeper, because I think the element that you mentioned, the cybersecurity element, is probably just going to get more and more important, right? With IoT, with the amount of devices that are getting connected and interconnected, it's just going to get more important. And I wanted to get your perspective. How do you see this synchronicity? Because still in a lot of organizations, it's pretty broken in silos, right? You have the IT department or tech department, whatever. You have the supply chain department. Can you give us some examples of organizations that you've seen that have done this really well, and where this, because it's not that, I mean, in my experience, at least in terms of from where we come from, a consulting angle or also executive search angle, it's not that common that the cybersecurity aspect sits within the supply chain field. So I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think it's something that really needs to sit across the whole of the organization. So if you're looking at, yes, you need the IT people, but at the same time, it's rather like, I came across this earlier, you know, this silo-based approach, when we were looking at data standards and information standards to use across the supply chain. So you probably know GS1, which is one of the key standards organizations. So, you know, when working with GS1, we often talk about the language of business. So really what they're basically saying is if you've got proof of delivery and so on and so forth, make sure that you have that in the same format. So, you know, advanced shipping notices, make sure that all the supply chain parties use the same format. So what they do is they have a standard format. And you witness this mostly in the grocery supply chain, because every barcode can be read, you know, around the world. You know, you have a standard barcode structure, which can then be read by, scanners and so on and so forth. If you didn't have that, you'd have all sorts of problems. Now, I remember actually, it's a few years ago now, we were doing an event saying, hey, look, you know, this is really important for the supply chain, having a common language, you know, common ways of working. And we need to actually mobilize organizations to think more carefully about this. So we sent out an invitation to the supply chain directors, and the supply chain directors all turned around and said, no, that's not our job. That's our information, you know, information director's job. So then you send an invitation to the information directors, and they turn around and say, oh, no, that's not our job. That's the supply chain director's job. And that's the problem with silos, is that there's some big gaps in between. So you have to start thinking process. And it's the same with cybersecurity. It's not one function that can actually deal with this. This is a whole organizational culture that needs to be addressed. So, you know, you're having to make everybody sort of think through what the implications are for the way that you're sharing data, how you're managing and protecting your systems and so on and so forth. And if you look at some of the recent attacks, I mean, one which is well documented, so it's probably worth sharing, is Target, the US retailer. They ended up being hit a number of years ago now. And effectively, that came from a refrigeration, heating, ventilation, air conditioning supplier, okay, who was attacked with phishing emails. So then they were able to get onto that supplier's systems. From the supplier's systems, because of the connectivity to heating and ventilation systems in, you know, Target, for example, they were able to then get into the Target systems. They then sat there for a number of months, and they basically just harvested 40 million payment card credentials and 70 million customer records. Okay, once they got all that, then they were able to start basically making money out of it, of course. And they reckon that has actually cost Target 162 million so far. You know, I don't know if the final cost have actually been worked out. So this is substantial amounts of money. I mean, another example, Google Australia. They had, once again, their building control systems were actually hacked by some hacktivists. And they got into all Google systems there. So you know, you're sitting there as a supply chain person, but you've got to think about how we secure things. But if you think about the infrastructure that the supply chain director's in charge of, you know, or might have some responsibility for, you think about your warehouse management systems and so on and so forth. If somebody gets into that and trashes all the data records, you're not going to know what's going on for a very long time. And of course, we've recently had some, just in the last few months, I mean, we're talking, aren't we, in January 2020, we've had Austria, their government systems have been targeted. And we've also got Travelex, which is the travel money organization, has also had a big attack on that as well. And that's out of action. And the problem is they offer those services into retailers and other organizations. So, you know, in the United Kingdom, you can get your money from Tesco, the big supermarket, and they use their systems, but it's branded as Tesco, you know, travel money or whatever. And actually behind all that, it's Travelex who are managing it. Nobody can move anything anywhere at the moment. And I haven't had an update on it recently. But, that business is still, I think that happened around Christmas time. And they're still, from last I heard, they're still, things are not fully operational. So, you know, this is severe and it's increasing. So we need to start thinking very differently about the amount of focus we put into this. That's one of the things which I think, you know, should be keeping awake at night, supply chain directors, to think what can they do to help, secure the business. because, you know, the supply chain, if it's attacked, competition is not between individual companies, it's between the supply chains they're part of, and you could very easily lose your competitive position if you don't deal with these issues.
Mm. And if we were to think from a very practical and pragmatic perspective, let's say, Professor Richard, that you are the chief supply chain officer of a major retailer or manufacturing company, and you wanted to ensure that your supply chain has minimal risk or even, you know, risk zero, what would be some of the first things that you would do and look at?
Well, you're never going to get it to zero. But I mean, one of the things that I'm looking at with one company is in the United Kingdom, we have something which is actually run by the government, and it's Cyber Essentials. It's like a kite mark that you can have. And the interesting thing about Cyber Essentials is that, you know, they talk about reassuring customers that you're working to secure your IT against cyber attack. Okay, you can attract new business with the promise you have cybersecurity measures in place. You have a clear picture of your organization's cybersecurity levels, and some government contracts require Cyber Essentials. So this is Cyber Essentials is this initiative, and you can do it on a very much a voluntary basis, but you can also get it audited and you can get a badge for it. So one of the things that, I've been working with companies with is saying, hang on a minute, if you're thinking about, you know, procurement and so on and so forth, is Cyber Essentials something that you're actually asking of your suppliers? You know, is this something that you can ask of your suppliers? So that, you know, you can practically do something useful. I'm sure other countries have similar initiatives, but if not, just, you know, if you look at Google something like, you know, UK Cyber Essentials, I'm sure you'll be able to find the details of these initiatives. So that just really starts to give people the processes and the opportunity to go through. Now, of course, at the end of the day, you're never going to completely protect yourself, but it's just a lot of it is good housekeeping. I mean, one of my favorite little thoughts I came across on Twitter is about passwords. Okay, so here's a great quote. Passwords are like underwear. Don't let people see it. Change it often, and you should not share it with strangers. So you know, if you take on board, I've been sharing that with Ian Cranfield, you know, so if you take on board some of the basics of, you know, having more complex passwords, changing them on a regular basis, ensuring that everybody's aware of these things, you know, that becomes really important. And I think from a supply chain perspective, if you think about when I'm working with companies on supply chain strategy, I generally say there's, you know, in simplistic terms, there's four building blocks. There's the supply chain process design, the supply chain infrastructure and equipment that you're using. There's the information systems, but also there's the organization, the people, and, you know, that side of things. And really, if you think about it, if you're going to take out a supply chain, you can take out either the processes, the infrastructure, the information systems, or the people. So, you know, if you're thinking about sometimes it is easier to take out the people, right? So if you think about you in your office, it may be that, you know, I go onto Facebook, I find out lots of details about you. Because I've got all those details, I'm then able to maybe hack into one of your accounts. Because I've hacked into one of your accounts, I then am able to maybe get into your business, you know, the business's account, and so on and so forth. So it's something that, you know, it can be, you might see your work and the way you operate at home in terms of your IT systems as very different. But of course, that everything's connected at the moment. So, you know, if you're disclosing lots of information on Facebook and so on and so forth, there is a better chance that maybe people might be able to, you know, get your details for your work, you know, security, as it were. Infrastructure. So, you know, you could target infrastructure. So you could target particular bits of infrastructure which people are having to deal with in order to disrupt the supply chain. That could be, you know, it could be vehicles, it could be warehouse management systems, it could be all sorts of things. Of course, it could be the information systems, but also you might want to disrupt processes. So, you know, these are some of the things that we have to think through, and we have to have protection in place on all those elements so that, you know, we understand the resilience of what's happening or happening.
And on the topic of people, because now I guess if I'm to speak metaphorically, you've kind of transitioned from physically building bricks to more metaphorically building the fundamental bricks of knowledge, right, in the minds of the students and in the minds of the future workforce. What do you see, Professor, in this age where we're talking a lot about, you know, Industry 4.0, we're talking a lot about digitization, about robotics, machine learning, there's a bunch of technologies that are coming fast. What do you see as skills needed for the future supply chain leaders and professionals to make them or to keep them relevant into this very fast changing world?
Well, I mean, what I often talk about is that what we have is, you know, you have your technical intelligence, okay? So this is the IQ of the supply chain. Now, traditionally, you know, the IQ of the supply chain might be around, you know, how do I manage inventory? How do I, you know, warehouse design? You know, it's all that that technical knowledge, which often, you know, if you come to Cranfield, we can give you an awful lot of supply chain IQ, you know, that technical intelligence of the supply chain. The challenge is that really, to some degree, is just the qualifier now. You know, that is very much just the qualifier. The winner is the EQ, or the emotional intelligence of the supply chain, which is the relational intelligence. It's how we manage relationships. So, you know, if you're looking at all the examples we've discussed so far, you know, if you're looking at cyber, you're going to have to manage relationships across the broad supply chain and within your organization to really deal with this effectively. You know, it's not just about, you know, sitting in your business and doing something very technologically, you know, advanced. That's a part of it, but the relationship side of things is also very important to deal with. Now, part of the challenge that we've then got is, if you're looking at supply chain 4.0 and all those elements, the technical intelligence, the qualifying technical intelligence elements, is changing very rapidly. So, you know, if you go back and you think that, you know, a supply chain professional at one time, if he sort of understood, you know, inventory control algorithms and, you know, routing algorithms and a few things like that, he or she was probably absolutely fine. You know, they could do a very nice job with just that level of technical intelligence. But really, for the jobs in the future, you're going to need a whole raft of different sort of skills and things that are required. So this is very much part of the challenge. So if I'm doing supply chain strategy, going back to my processes, infrastructure, information systems, and then the people. If, for example, we say, hey, you know, instead of having a warehouse that just has loads of racking with loads of automotive parts on it, we put into the warehouse a clever additive manufacturing 3D printing machine. So we don't actually keep any physical parts. We just keep virtual plans of the parts and we print them when we need them. Okay. That will have a big impact on the infrastructure side of things. You know, it might mean the warehouse is smaller. It might mean that, you know, we don't need as much racking. It could have implications across all sorts of different things. It also means we can change the processes, okay? So the processes that we used to have for managing inventory and distributing inventory may change. It will also have an impact on the information systems, because the information systems, you know, that we originally have will need to change to accommodate the fact that now they might be holding, you know, a virtual design rather than a, you know, keeping track of a physical product. So, you know, things will change there because you're putting a sort of a small manufacturing facility into your warehouse. But also think about the people. If you think about the people, the skill set to be able to operate in that environment, the technical intelligence is going to be completely different to if you don't have that bit of equipment, as it were. And this really is part of the challenge that we've got, that, you know, as we're increasingly putting in, you know, autonomous systems, robotics, and so on and so forth within particular facilities, the skill set of people working in those facilities needs to change quite dramatically to accommodate that. And we're already starting to see some of the challenges. I mean, you mentioned people talking about the best automotive factories. You know, one thing which was announced by Nike just over a year or so ago now was that they were wanting to really digitize their whole supply chain. And the current model they spoke about was, we have 1 million workers in 566 factories, 75 distribution centers, and 30,000 retailers in 190 countries. And they have this vision of this future model of installing 1,200 additive manufacturing machines. And they're saying, this is great news because we can nearshore, so reduce shipping expenses, import duties, and overproduction risks. And they also say, what's great about this is there are 30% fewer steps in the process. And also in the report, there was a little thing which says we can also have 50% less labor within this environment. So what we have to think is if you, the current model is 1 million workers in 566 factories. Now they're saying we want 50% less labor. So what we've got then is we've got a situation where 500,000 people effectively on that supply chain will be out of work. Now that has significant social consequences. So if I look at what they're doing, you know, doing nearshoring, manufacturing, you know, locally, great for the planet, you know. So in terms of the planet, the environment, that's good news. You know, we're not shipping all this stuff around the world, less CO2, less this, less that, and everything else, okay? Profitability, well, you know, we'll see, but I'm sure they're doing it because it's going to save them a lot of money, and that it's going to make them more profitable. So on you know, the planet, it's good. On profitability, it's good. But what about the people? What about the, you know, the social implications of this? You know, at the end of the day, if we've got 500,000 people who haven't got jobs, how are we going to manage that? Is that going to lead to civil unrest? If it leads to civil unrest in those nations, is that going to disrupt other supply chains that we're part of? And I think that this now is something that, you know, supply chain professionals need to consider. It's not just about, you know, the profits, as it were. We're being encouraged to think about the planet, but also we're going to have to start thinking carefully about the people, because some of the decisions, as we're in a transition at the moment between, if you like, two ways of working, you know, we're moving into this new, you know, new industrial revolution, as it were. You will always find, you know, if you look at past industrial revolutions and past, you know, ages of industry, you go through a dip where you've got the old rubbing up against the new. And we're at that point now. So, you know, we've got to be quite careful in thinking through our decisions and saying, how will these decisions also impact on society? And in terms of its impact on society, it's also going to have an impact on the skills of the people that we need. So, you know, people who have a skill set like me, who knows, I'm going to be replaced by a hologram an artificial intelligence engine potentially, you know, which will do everything which I do. Well, I don't think we're quite there yet, but that's the type of thing that we need to actually think through. So how am I going to adjust my job so I'm still going to be competitive in the future? Yeah. You know, so it's this lifelong learning. So, you know, a key thing and the importance of organizations like the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport is that we're very much involved in that lifelong learning. And that's very much what Cranfield's all about as well. So we have our executive programs. We have our, you know, there's master's programs that people will do. But at the end of the day, what we're having to create for people is that situation where you can come and you can get used skills and retraining your current skills so that you're able to go, you know, to carry on in your work and think through, you know, what's actually going on. So I think that that is going to be a pretty big challenge for everybody in the future.
And I wanted to also pick on this topic because the education system in itself is very much ripe for disruption, I guess. We have things like, I think they call MOOC, MOOCs, Massive
Online something courses. So this is really what this is saying is we can, you know, if you think about, I guess, the very traditional model of education, it's, you know, maybe 30 people in a room and you talk to them. With, you know, the internet, what we're now able to do is to communicate to thousands. I mean, I've got on iTunes U, I've got an introduction to sort of supply chain management, a course there, which has been consistently, believe it or not, in the top 10 to top 20 business courses on iTunes U, which is iTunes University. And that has, you know, we try to track it, but that's had well over 60,000 subscribers to that. You know, that's collections of podcast papers and so on and so forth. So what I'm being able to do is to communicate globally to 60,000 people through doing this. And it's like this podcast we're doing now. I mean, if you think about the number of people who may listen in or download and so on and so forth, it probably far exceeds the number of people that I can speak to in a classroom at Cranfield. So things are changing in that way, but I think it depends on the types of what you're trying to achieve in terms of your education. And that's really where things are important here. At Cranfield, what we take is very much a blended learning approach. And what that means is we will use web-based teaching. Often that might be for the more basic elements of what we're trying to get people to understand. You know, you can do that very well on some of the, you know, supply chain fundamentals, as it were. But actually, what's really important as well, particularly for supply chain leaders and executives, is you do need to get people together to share ideas. You know, I say that innovation is taking ideas which are new to you and creating economic, social, or environmental value. So, you know, the challenge then is if innovation is all about taking those ideas which are new to you and creating value, is how do you get those ideas and share those ideas? And sometimes the best way you can do that is get people here at Cranfield in the lecture theatre and probably in the bar afterwards to, you know, to talk through these ideas. Yeah, I do think sometimes actually the the learning in the bar afterwards and over dinner it can exceed what's going on in the lecture theatre. And to be quite honest, that's quite right, because what I will be doing is throwing ideas at people, and you have to be able to take them away and think about them and discuss them before you can think about how you're going to take that knowledge and create action. You know, that's what I'm all about, taking knowledge and creating action. And we do a lot of that. I mean, I run a 1 week course here, the Cranfield Supply Chain Management Program, which has been running for many years, and we get senior supply chain directors going on that, and I often say to them, I said, when was the last time you had a 1 week out of your business to basically think about supply chain? And in a way, it's like a supply chain retreat. You know what I mean? It's you're getting out of the business for 1 week, and we take them through the end-to-end supply chain, the key things that you're having to think through during that, and you see how it all connects. But actually, it's those discussions and what's going on around that, because it, if you like, it refreshes them and it enables them to take that knowledge and create action. So as part of that, we have action planning workshops every morning, where I don't have them at the end of the day, because you see, at the end of the day, everybody's still thinking, oh blimey, what do I do with this? They need to sleep on things. They need to sort of get in the bar and discuss things. And then in the morning, they're able to sort of think with more clarity about, right, that that concept there, I need to apply in my business, and this is how I'm going to do it. So they're able to take that knowledge and then say, this is the action I'm going to be taking. We do that every day over those 5 days. And at the end, they then have a plan of action for their business so they can go out and create some change. And that's what really excites me, because we're improving the way supply chains operate globally. You know, we're helping those businesses in terms of, you know, the profitability of those businesses. We're helping them, you know, wrestle through the challenges in terms of the planet. How can we do things differently there? But also, you know, what I do hope is that we give, you know, a bit of a social conscience, because at the end of the day, it's also about managing those relationships and thinking about society in the long run. So we have to sort of get a trade-off on all those areas.
We tend to agree that indeed the combination between online and classroom-based learning is pretty much where we're heading, and also a lot of things are readily available online. We have a lot of courses that are available online. We had Professor Yossi Sheffi from MIT in one of the episodes on the podcast, and he's a very big advocate as well in terms of this blend of learning and call it learning agility for students and people of all ages nowadays to be able to pick up information from the online spectrum. So that's great to hear. And moving towards the last question that I wanted to address to you, Professor, which is very much to maybe the younger audience or the younger professionals listening to this, what would be your advice to somebody that would want to become a chief supply chain officer? What should they be looking at?
I think some of the big things around this is just thinking in terms of, you have to think process. So, you know, early in your career, try and get as much of an overview of the organization as possible. Now, some companies are actually very good at doing this, you know, thinking through the types of skills and things that people need, but other organizations are not so good. You don't want everybody to be a generalist. I talk about the concept of T-shaped people, you know, like the letter T. You've got, across the top, you need that process view, but you also need a functional specialism. You don't want people to become total generalists, because they're less useful. So I think the point is, from a supply chain perspective, you still need to very much have that technical knowledge, that some specialism, but you also need to understand the process that you're part of. So you still need to have a reasonable understanding of all those various other elements which are taking place. And you also need to develop that emotional intelligence, you know, that relational intelligence. And so, you know, if I'd encourage people to think through, how can you get that? And you don't have to do it in your job. You know, it might be that I often look at the skills that people utilize in their workplace, but what are the skills that people utilize outside of their workplace? You know, and, you know, some of those skills we can utilize. So I know, you know, here at Cranfield, I've got colleagues who might be quite junior, but they're doing fantastic things, say, working with the guides, you know, the girl guides, or, you know, other people are working with, you know, their local communities in certain projects. So you're able to learn new skills. Another really important thing is there is no doubt about it that you've got to develop the language of the boardroom. You know, if you're going to be a chief supply chain officer, you've got to think through, what's the language of the boardroom? And the language of the boardroom is not a load of technical, crazy supply chain language. Generally, it's around shareholder value. So one of the things which I have you know, work with a number of companies is, we talk about the language of profit. Yeah. So how can you know, people will turn around, here's an example, and say, oh, you know, we've got availability of 92% and we're going to get it to 95%. Well, what does that mean? You know, if you share that with people, it makes no sense at all. They can't visualize what they're talking about, you know. So you get some crazy supply chain language which is going on, which nobody understands. You know, I got a quote once. Unfortunately, your SKU did not arrive within the lead time due to a problem in the safety stock calculation following our recent collaborative partnership move to production postponement. You know, what are we talking about? So what we have to do, language of profit says things like, right, you know, say you go to a company and say, hey, I can improve availability from 92 to 95%. What does that mean? If the language of profit, you turn around and you say, hang on a minute, at the moment, you're losing £100,000 in sales per year or whatever. I can help you reduce that loss to £50,000. All that might be doing is taking it from 92% to 95%. But you're using language that people can relate to. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, becomes really true in this whole area is that you have to start using the right language within the business. You need to develop that language and back off from supply chain. I think it was there's a good quote from the founder of Aldi. And the founder of Aldi said, change your language and you change your thoughts, which I thought, yeah, that's interesting. But I've adapted that. If you change your language, you change your thoughts. If you change your thoughts, you change the culture. And often that's what we're trying to do within the supply chain, is to create some sort of cultural change. So in a way, you know, if we're going back to the question, which is around what does a chief supply chain officer need, they need that breadth of experience. They also need a bit of specialism in certain areas, but you've got to also, I would argue, be able to talk the right language. So you need to think about the language of the business, the language of the boardroom, in order to make this work. So, you know, that's one of the key things that you do need to think through as you're doing this.
Thank you very much, Professor, for joining us. It's been a great session and really appreciate all the sharings and stories that you had for us today.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help.